Apparently, we do not have a quorum yet, so we can't approve the minutes. But today, we're going to review the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Basically, their, not necessarily their budget, but their whole ball of wax, I presume you'd say. And we do have Mr. Jeff Hamel, I believe, is the presenter. Right, executive director. I was waiting for a quorum, but you can stay there. Representative Morgan has an announcement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank everybody who was able to come on down to my district last night and hear testimony from the residents of Burnsville and the surrounding areas about their concerns on transportation and transit issues. I'd like to thank the chair and the chair of the transit subcommittee, Representative Hornstein, for helping us arrange that event, and all the staff who were doing extra duty that night to come on down and hear the concerns of the residents of my district and the surrounding areas. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. And it was actually a real good evening for the committee. Good presentations. We do have a quorum now before Mr. Hamel starts. So would someone have taken a look at the minutes and had to entertain a motion to approve the minutes if you look at
them? I'll move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan moves to approve the minutes as read. Any discussion? Not as read, but as looked at, I suppose. Any discussion or comment? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 The minutes are approved. Oh, I thought I heard 10 ayes, but not. We better. All against? No. The motion is approved. Mr. Hamel?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here to speak with the committee. As I understand your request of us today, we are here to talk a little bit about the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Overall background was in my plan today to kind of give you some just good information about the commission, what it is, what it stands for, our size, our operation, as kind of a brief sort of a 5 to 10 minute introduction. And I think we wanted to move into the real focus in our discussion with you, Mr. Chair, earlier, to talk more about how MAC generates its revenue and where our money comes from, and how much money we have to deal with, and how we decide to disperse and allocate those funds and what it costs to run the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport and our 6 reliever airports throughout the metropolitan area. So I am prepared today to address all of those issues. If I may, as a matter of procedure, I understand we have about a 30-minute time frame for presentation and about 15 minutes or so for questions and answers. However, once we get moving, it's kind of tough to go back and pick up 25 minutes previously something that was said. So if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to kind of mix it with discussion and questions and answers and presentations so that we can deal with questions as they come along and not worry about trying to go back to recover questions from the very beginning of the discussion. If that's okay, I'm not bothered at all by being interrupted and being asked questions during the process here.
Any comments from the members? If not, that sounds fine.
Very good.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is start today with the handout that you should have in front of you. There should be two handouts in front of you. One is, starts out with what is the MAC, and the second is a bound copy that talks about the Commission's financial overview. We're going to start with what is the MAC as being the kind of walkthrough on general information regarding what the Commission is and what it does. And I'll just go right into it, and please feel free to interrupt at any time you have a question. The Airports Commission is a corporation created by the Minnesota State Legislature in 1943. It was the first of the Metropolitan Commissions, and it has jurisdictional responsibility for the management and operation of public airports in the Southern County metropolitan area. The original designation or definition of our jurisdiction was 35-mile radius from downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul, so there were two kind of overlapping concentric circles. But basically, it incorporates all of the Southern County metro area and actually bits and pieces of about 4 or 5 additional counties. So we have broad jurisdiction over all air transportation issues and facilities in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Basically, we run the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport and have 6 reliever airports that I'll talk about in more detail a little bit later. But those airports consist of the St. Paul Downtown Airport, which is our only corporate reliever airport. On the east side of St. Paul, the Lake Elmo Airport. To the north, the Anoka County Blaine Airport. In the Crystal area, the Crystal Airport. In the western suburbs, the Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie. And down south, the Air Lake Airport in Lakeville. The purpose of the MAC was defined by you, the legislature, in 1943. You told us that our job was to promote air transportation and commerce within the seven-county region, and to do so by providing a safe and efficient serving airports system to be part of the domestic and international air transportation. And that led us to our mission statement, which we have carried for many, many years, which reads, we provide and promote safe, convenient, environmentally sound, cost-competitive aviation services for our customers. Our customers, by the way, are defined as being, obviously, the citizens of the state of Minnesota who rely on air transportation services for their travel needs, but also the various businesses that we do business with on a daily basis. What's interesting about the Metropolitan Airports Commission is that while we're a public agency, probably 90-plus percent of the business activity of this public agency is working in the private sector. We work with the airline companies, we work with all of the vendors in our various terminal facilities and folks that provide food and beverage and retail sales and so forth, all the services in the airport, but also all the businesses that are located on our reliever airports, so all the flight schools and the training facilities, the maintenance facilities and so forth that you see throughout the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And they really are the people that we spend most of our time with. So we are very, very much a public agency that's focused on the private sector. The next slide is labeled MAC Board Makeup. You can see from the map that we basically have, I haven't counted them, 8 metropolitan jurisdictions. If you'll recall, the Metropolitan Council has 16. And when the MAC was created and our jurisdictions were defined, we basically took every 2 of the Met Council's jurisdictions and combined them into 1. So we have 8 jurisdictions around the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The governor of the state of Minnesota appoints 13 of our 15 board members. The other 2 seats are occupied by the mayor of Minneapolis and the mayor of St. Paul. The 2 cities do not, the mayors themselves do not serve on our board. They haven't for quite some time. They have representatives appointed on their behalf to serve and represent the needs and the concerns of both of the 2 cities proper. The board of 15 is one of the largest boards in the country. In fact, there's only 1 airport in the United States that has a larger board. That airport has 17 members. The average size of an airport authority board across America is between 7 and 9 members. Commissioners,
give me a minute.
Yes.
I want to ask something. Do you have this, Mr. Hamill, or Mr. Hamill? I was thinking of Nigel. Do you have this on a disc? I think we could put it on the screen if you have. That's what I was wondering. If
the page. No. I didn't bring a disc with me today. I apologize.
That's
so the audience is not seeing any of the information that you're looking at, I take it. All right, we'll keep that in mind for next time when we come before.
I just thought if you did have, because we aren't using it. I mean, we don't have it up there. That's
okay,
fine.
Yeah, we don't. I didn't bring a disc with me today.
Thank you, though.
Mm-hmm. I apologize. One last comment, Mr. Chairman, members, on the board makeup. Our commissioners are appointed by the governor for a 4-year term. They are not all appointed at the same time, and as a result, we have rotating seats that rotate over time. And as a result, 2 or 3, typically maybe 4 commissioners would leave at any given year, and there would be new appointments coming onto the board. Bottom line is that what we do is, with that kind of a transition, we're able to maintain continuity and knowledge of issues and so forth, so that we don't have everyone vacate the board at the same time and have a whole new group of people coming back on and picking up where the previous board left off. There's always that carrying on of knowledge and expertise in the area of our programs so that we don't lose the information necessary to continue to do our business in a systematic manner. This is critical to the MAC because we are doing business with private companies who are depending upon consistency and follow-through and delivery of services, and we can't stop our process while a new board comes on and spends 3, 4, or 5 months trying to spool up to the business of the day. So it's an effective board. It works quite well, but it's larger than most airport authorities. MAC Airport Operations. Minneapolis-Saint-Paul International Airport ranks the 10th largest airport in the world in total takeoffs and landings. I will tell you that these numbers do fluctuate a little bit with the economy and with decisions by airline companies. Right now, we are ranking slightly higher on the list than we normally do, and that's because Northwest Airlines has downsized its operation in Minneapolis-St. Paul as a result of the most recent bankruptcy filing of the company. Their operations are down. The passenger levels have dropped. We now rank 10th. And the airport basically has somewhere in the vicinity of about 500,000 takeoffs and landings. It's an important number to remember because NSP has a little over 500,000 takeoffs and landings for primarily airliners, large passenger jet aircraft. Notice that in the second bullet, our reliever airport system also has about 500,000 takeoffs and landings a year. That's the whole purpose of why we call them reliever airports. They are designed to relieve the pressure placed upon MSP by providing an airport that is an adequate and appropriate size for smaller aircraft. We believe that we should preserve the capacity of MSP International Airport for large airliners that need the long runways, heavy jet operations, and provide smaller airports around the perimeter of the metro area for use by smaller aircraft, including smaller corporate jet aircraft as well. So the concept of relief airports is healthy and well. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hamill, what is it, the comparative size of the airport, you know, like acreage, if you're going to call it that, with other airports? I know it's considered a small-sized airport. Do you have any rankings with that? Because is that ever a consideration that's coming up? I know the problem was about relocation or rebuilding. Is that ever going to appear again? Or you never know, and I'm just kind of curious. Again, I've forgotten what...
Mr. Chairman, committee members, first of all, you have to recognize that the chairman and I have known each other for a long time. It was 15 years ago that we started traveling around the country together, looking at airports when we were in the middle of the dual-track airport planning process, when we were considering staying at our current location or moving to a new greenfield site and building a new international airport. Our size compared to other large metropolitan area hub airports is relatively small. The Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport sits on about 3,100 acres of land. In comparison, just to give you an example, the 10-year-old Denver International Airport sits on 35,000 acres of land, or somewhere more than 11 times the size of MSP's real estate. A typical airport in a metropolitan area that's relatively new and has acquired enough open space to accommodate growth is somewhere in the area of about 7,000 or 8,000 acres typically, so more than double the size of MSP. Any new airport that would be built would try to protect itself by acquiring, at least having control over 35,000 to 40,000 acres in the vicinity of the airport. Smaller airports, like our reliever airports, run anywhere from a couple hundred acres to 600 or 700 acres in size, so less than a third, about a quarter of the size of MSP is our largest reliever airport. Moving on to the next slide, MSP statistics, Mr. Chairman, members. There are a lot of numbers, but I want to point some critical points in our history that impact those numbers. If you'll notice from 1996, which is at the bottom of the graphic, and moving up toward 2001, you can see a slow progression of both operations, that is takeoffs and landings at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, and passenger growth as well. Growing in 1996 in takeoffs and landings from 485,500 or so up to 523,000 in the year 2000. And the same thing is similar with passengers, going from 28.75 million passengers to about 36.75 million passengers by 2000. 2000 begins to tell us the story about the volatility of the airline industry and air transportation in general. Because we all know now that in 2000 we started to see a leveling off of our economy. The 96 or 2000 timeframe represents kind of the dot-com era where everybody was evidently making a lot of money in every investment and you couldn't go wrong. The economy was extremely robust and healthy and growing dynamically. As it started to slow in the year 2000, we saw a leveling off of our numbers. And on September the 11th of 2001, that's when the terrorist attack on New York and the Pentagon took place. And as a result, we saw for the last quarter of the year, ever since September the 11th to the end of the year, literally a locking down and nearly a shutdown of the air transportation system from its normal operation. In fact, for 4 or 5 days, the entire air transportation system was out of service completely. All aircraft were grounded. And general aviation aircraft, that is corporate aviation and smaller airplanes, were virtually grounded for more than 90 days, well into the year 2002. So what you see is a dramatic drop representing a loss of activity for the fourth quarter of 2001, resulting in only 501,000 operations and 33.75 million passengers. And then you see the beginning of adjustments, and you see the beginning of fluctuations in traffic activity. 2004 represents the highest level of operations at MSP with 541,000 operations, that is again takeoffs and landings, and 2005 being the highest passenger level year at 37,663,000 passengers. And then all of a sudden you see in 2006 a decline. That decline represents the filing of bankruptcy by Northwest Airlines in September of 2005, resulting in the airline cutting back and beginning to do the tough things that have to be done to put the company's finances in proper order to be competitive and recover from bankruptcy. So today, Minneapolis-St. Paul is a smaller airport with fewer passengers and fewer operations than we have had in several years. This is a temporary situation, and if you take a look long-term into the future, we still project by the year 2020, the airport will grow to somewhere in the area of about 50 million annual passengers, up from the 36 million this year, and probably somewhere in the area of about 650,000, 680,000 takeoffs and landings, up from the 500,000 that we have new today. One of the more controversial issues, and I have to tell you in all honesty that the MAC is always fraught with controversy. The airport is necessary and it's important to the economic vitality of the region and the community, but with that importance and that significance in our economy come the negative aspects, and there are several. One which is probably most visible and quite frankly headline news right now at this particular point in time is aircraft noise and the impact of noise on communities around the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. One of the primary reasons why you in 1989 passed the Airport Planning Act, which directed us to start the dual-track airport planning process, was driven by two factors. One was the issue of capacity and can the airport meet the future growth projections of the community, and secondly, the noise impact of the aircraft operations of the residential areas near the airport. We have what I consider to be one of the strongest and most aggressive noise mitigation programs in the nation. In fact, I'll be bolder and I'll tell you that it's probably the most aggressive noise mitigation program in the world. I don't know of any airport anywhere that has a more aggressive program on a per capita basis. And I'm not going to belabor the point or talk a great deal about it, but let me just simply tell you that as of today, the Airports Commission has completed a complete home insulation program for all residences living inside the 65 DNL noise exposure contour around the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. That means that we have insulated almost 7,700 single-family homes with new windows, external doors. We have insulated the attics and the walls and so forth of homes. In many cases, replaced furnaces and with air conditioning systems to seal the homes properly. We've basically treated almost 7,700 homes with this noise mitigation treatment. Average cost per home for the 65 DNL and higher noise exposure area is about $45,000 per household. No contribution whatsoever from the homeowner. This is strictly a public investment in the properties around the airport in response to noise mitigation. In addition to the 7,700 homes, we've also completed 752 multifamily units. Total cost of this program for insulation alone is $232 million, none of which comes from the Minnesota taxpayer. We've also acquired and done 156 additional single-family homes under the new 2007 65 DNL contour and has spent an additional $14 million on additional insulation. In addition to residential insulation, we've also insulated 17 schools in the metropolitan area, primarily Minneapolis, Richfield, and Mendota Heights, at a total cost of $43.2 million. And we've acquired, at the request of communities, properties that are impacted by the airport that needed to be acquired as opposed to insulated because of their proximity to the airport. More than $70 million have been spent to date acquiring properties. At the end of the day, we have spent over $340 million today. We still have an ongoing noise mitigation program with continued public investment. All of the dollars that go into this program come from rates and charges paid by airline companies that service the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, or money that we borrow or receive through federal grants and aid that come from aviation trust fund revenues. The important point here is that general taxpayer revenues, appropriations from the state of Minnesota and the legislature are not any part of this item. This expense is the one that's borne solely by the Airports Commission and its access to funds in a variety of sources.
Mr. Chairman, we have a question. Representative Morgan.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hamill, I represent a good portion of Burnsville. And years ago when the 1735 runway was being planned, the residents of my district were told that the FAA would be directing a good portion of the traffic, or at least a fair share of the traffic over Burnsville, but a good portion of it would be heading over the Minnesota River Valley.
Yes.
So as not to affect the residents of my district. Since operations had begun on 1735, the residents of the district and data would suggest us that this is not the case, that the FAA is not directing planes the way they said they would. Could you comment on the current status of the conversations between leaders of the Burnsville area and the MAC and FAA about this problem?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, you touched on a sensitive issue for all of us because this is one of the situations where the Metropolitan Airports Commission, the City Council, and the community have been partners aggressively challenging the Federal Aviation Administration and their decision on how to handle and manage traffic around the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. Representative Morgan is absolutely correct. We have a team of staff folks who are experts in aircraft noise mitigation and management who have spent two or more years in public meetings, over 100 community meetings in the South Metro area, Eagan, South Bloomington, Burnsville, Lakeville, those communities, in preparation for the opening of runway 1735. And that runway, I don't have a photograph that would depict it. If I find one, I will point it out. There's actually a map that's labeled noise contour map in your package. And if you look at the green area in the middle, that is the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. On the left-hand side, the border is an orange vertical line. That is Cedar Avenue. If you go to the right slightly, there's a gray line confined within the kind of left-hand edge of the green shadow. That's runway 1735. That is our newest runway at the airport. This is the runway that's affecting Representative Morgan's community and all the communities south of the Twin Cities. Is it in there?
It's in the blue package.
Yes. In the blue package, you can see it more clearly. Thank you. We have been working as partners with the citizens and the city councils of the South Metro communities, working with the FAA to convince them that what we had planned to do with their cooperation, what we had committed to and told the communities for the last 2 years that we were going to do, is what we should execute. The FAA ran into some serious operational issues and conflicting airspace problems after the runway was up and operational, resulting in aircraft not turning westbound over the Minnesota River, but proceeding more southbound directly over the city of Burnsville, and then more from south to east, spreading over Eagan. What this does is distribute noise in a more concentrated area due south of the airport, generating more noise and more noise complaints. We were embarrassed by that. We were caught off guard and surprised by that. And for the last year and a half, we've been working with the FAA on that program along with the Noise Operations Committee, the NOC. I'm pleased to report to you a couple of things. Not great strides, but progress. Number one, the FAA is not utilizing runway 1735 at the level that they had projected they would use it, so there are actually fewer operations on that runway than we had originally planned. That is not good news or bad news to the folks who live south of the airport. I'm just telling you there are fewer there than there was before, or planned to be. More importantly, however, the FAA just recently has consented to initiate a 60-day test program that will permit aircraft to turn 215 degrees, which is not the 230 degrees, but when you're 4 miles, air miles, south of the airport, a 15 to 25 degree turn farther to the west, in fact, does disperse traffic and will put more aircraft over the river valley and moving toward the southwest corner of the metro area. And I think that with our monitoring equipment and so forth, that we're going to recognize and see a broader dispersion, less concentration of noise, and I think an improved overall condition. We will also, and I will commit to you this, we will also work with the FAA that once we've demonstrated that the 215 degree heading works, we'll then begin to push for 220 or 25 or 30 degrees and get back to the point where we thought we had negotiated 2 years ago. It's a highly sensitive issue for us. It's a very frustrating situation. I respect the FAA's need to do their job safely. All of us want them to operate safely. But I would question why we didn't discover this in the planning process and why we weren't told of this decision sooner. And as a result, we're aggressively working with the communities and trying to solve that problem. I might just add, Mr. Chair, we were in the neighborhoods telling the folks in Burnsville and Eagan and South Bloomington, Lakeville, that there's going to be a noticeable and significant change in the environment of the community. Arrivals are going to come in lower, they're going to be lined up, and they're going to be flying one after another when we arrive on runway 35, and across the parting, they're going to take off on runway 17, and they're going to be spreading out, and while you won't see one coming over your house every single departure, there will be more activity at low altitude and more noise. The community actually, from our experience in those meetings, understood that, and was, quite frankly, very concerned, but cooperative and trusted us. And that's important to us, particularly these days where we've been challenged with our commitments and our promises. And as a result, we're going to work very hard to make certain that there's minimal impact in those communities.
Mr. Hamill, we have more questions. And I hope that the committee, that we don't get into a hearing on noise. I was trying to avoid this because that's not our intent here. But right. We do have some questions, and if you could kind of keep us on track. We're not here to have a hearing on noise because that's actually out of our domain, basically. That's a function of the MAC, but we certainly, and I respect the questions. I mean,
certainly.
We certainly should have those. We should have them, but we want to limit it to a point that we don't have the whole session going on that. Representative Hornstein has a question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, that was going to be one of my points, is that this is such a expansive issue, and I hope at some point we could have the city of Minneapolis and some of the surrounding cities, either in local government or here, talk about this very important lawsuit that is now in the courts, class action lawsuit related to the noise levels, expanding out the insulation, getting into some commitments that the MAC made to communities. So I just wanted to point that out to the committee that we're really engaged, and it's in the legal arena now. But my question, and in my district, it's 1230 that's the runways that are the problem. But I just had a very quick question, Mr. Chair, on this topic with Mr. Hamill. It's very current because, as many of you know in the papers, and you may have been following the discussions that the MAC has had with Northwest. And there were some noise-related provisions in the agreement that, in fact, many of us welcomed in the agreement of 2 weeks ago. And those were stripped out yesterday. There was substitute language. I guess my question, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hamill, is what changed in the last 2 weeks? It was a very substantive change that was made in a relatively short period of time. And I guess I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Mr. Hamill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Orenstein, I would have to respond by telling you that it became very, very clear to us in our discussions. Let me preface by saying that one of our commissioners, Commissioner Dan Bolvin, appointed by the mayor of Minneapolis as the mayor's rep, has been a very, very aggressive advocate for noise mitigation and noise programs on our board. And he introduced language 2 weeks ago that he felt would not bind the airline industry. And by the way, this is not just a negotiation between MAC and Northwest Airlines. This, in fact, incorporates all the commercial airline companies that serve Minneapolis-St. Paul. It just so happens that Northwest Airlines is about 80% of our total operation, and as a result, the airlines have asked Northwest to be the primary negotiating party in this agreement. And they are the largest recipient of the benefit of the negotiation process. But Commissioner Bolvin introduced language to the commission. It passed the commission, and that motion was then tabled for further deliberation and for further work because we had some problems with the definition of hub and headquarters language to ensure that Minneapolis-St. Paul would be protected from the airline receiving a financial benefit and a variety of other improvements at the airport, and then all of a sudden be able to pull its headquarters out and leave Minnesota or downsize or reduce the size of the hub operation, that is, the number of daily flights at the airport, which is important to our operation and our economics. The airline made it very, very clear in that public meeting when the board passed that amendment that if, in fact, a noise provision was included that materially affected the existing agreements at the airport, that the airline would not sign any agreement, they would not participate in any further negotiations, and would have to divert back to their legal bankruptcy authority, which is to default on their financial obligations at the airport. That has huge financial implications upon the MAC, and as a result, the commission went back to work and spent a week and a half or 2 weeks working on defining hub and headquarters once again to make certain that all parties could agree, and they were able to do so. And then about 2 days before the meeting, there was some effort on the part of the commissioners to find language that might be acceptable to all parties regarding noise. Depending on how you read the language of the initial Bolvin Amendment compared to what was passed yesterday by the commission, I will tell you that I think a legitimate argument can be made that the language was reduced as far as its overall importance and its impact. But I will also tell you that our chairman, Jack Lanners, made it very clear that what he wanted and what he absolutely required was that some recognition of noise abatement and noise mitigation had to be part of this agreement. The airline representatives indicated that if there was any provision for noise, they would not sign the agreement and they would proceed possibly with other significantly impacting financial consequences. The board basically ignored that, and they proceeded to pass noise language anyway because they felt that it was important that the airline be put on notice to recognize that while we're not going to specify what we're going to do, we were telling them that, in fact, noise is important and it's critical, and we're going to continue to address the noise issues and deal with it as it's being dealt with today in the courts, as well as other programs that we currently have ongoing to insulate and acoustically mitigate noise in other residential units. So I recognize your viewpoint, Representative Ornstein. I'm not going to argue that point with you. I will simply tell you that that language is there to make certain that there's a placeholder for awareness of noise being sent to both the legislature and to the community adjacent to the airport.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a much longer discussion. This is not the time and place, I think, or in an overview context. And I hope that, again, members, this is an agreement that was put together relatively quickly over the last few days, and it has a lot of consequences and importance, not only in my district and other noise-impacted districts, but I think for the whole state in general. And I hope that we'll have a chance during this legislative session to really examine this, give it the time it needs and deserves in terms of scrutiny. Because again, we heard over 2 days ago there were still issues being negotiated and discussed, and so I hope we as a committee, along with other appropriate committees, will have the chance to really examine this, at a time and place that's appropriate. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm done.
Representative Madore.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say I attended several of the community meetings that you have. I live in Apple Valley. Mm-hmm. And I just would like to know, are you going to come out and do actual testing with those noise measure devices so that, because some of the issue that we had heard about was that the frequency of those levels going higher than what you had anticipated, and then it's the average of all of those readings. So I guess I want to first make sure that Apple Valley is going to be included in this, and then will you be doing that as part of your follow-up, you said, the 60 days?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not certain that we're actually going to go out in the community with a noise monitor and set it up in people's yards and measure noise. It very well may be that we have the ability to do that, and we may. To be honest with you, I just haven't been involved in that kind of that daily operational level. But I will tell you this, that we have one of the largest noise measurement, permanently mounted noise measurement systems in the country. There are microphones all over the metropolitan area. And with that system, we have the ability, the computerized capability and technology, we can monitor aircraft departures, identify it by flight, altitude, noise level, airspeed, and direction. And we can, through the modeling process, calibrate and become remarkably close in accuracy. That's what the noise level is as the aircraft departs and turns away from the airport and goes to its destination, East Coast, South, West Coast, whatever the case may be. And those simulations that we do, we watch very carefully and very closely. They are available, and you can observe them on our website. You can go to the website of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and you can see almost a real-time presentation of that noise exposure level. But those calculations are public. They're presented to the NOC on a regular basis at their meetings. We are monitoring the noise today. We will continue to monitor the noise. We're sharing that information with the FAA, and we certainly will be able to come into the community and show you what we've done, what the result of our efforts are. We're not going to lose sight of that. Okay?
We are on a noise issue. There are other questions. I don't want to cut anybody off, but we don't want to get our whole period in.
Mr. Chair, can I take liberty to summarize one comment on the noise issue? When we look at the agreement that's currently being considered by the airlines, it's not a done deal. You must keep in mind also that all of the agreements that we've negotiated with the airlines since 1991 and the $270 million loan all the way through to today have all sorts of noise mitigation provisions included. And what this agreement that the board passed yesterday, that's not yet been accepted by the airline industry, assures homeowners that those previous agreements are intact, they are in place, and that we recognize what we have said in previous negotiated documents regarding our noise abatement plans and procedures at the airport. We're not negating or walking away from any of those obligations, and I want to make that very clear to the committee.
Representative Kalin.
One of the collateral benefits of doing the noise mitigation is the increasing energy efficiency of the homes, which is a real added plus. And I think it's a great opportunity, and I know that we want to continue doing that work, especially because you're working with older housing stock.
Mm-hmm.
Pivoting to then the energy conservation vis-a-vis the whole facility, the actual airport terminals, can you just comment a little bit about what steps MAC is taking to make the facilities more energy efficient, lighting, heating? I think the number one thing here is infiltration. A lot of cold air coming in, of course, with all the doors being open and closed. But if you could just talk about that, maybe some opportunities for partnering as we look at the conservation part of the energy bill here.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, President Kaler, members, I've got about a half hour presentation on this topic, but I'm going to condense it for 30 seconds. We have just completed a $3.1 billion airport expansion program where we have prepared the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport for the future, and we are now in a position where with the construction and the renovation and the additions to the airport terminal facility, we now are able to meet the growth and traffic projections through the year 2020 and slightly beyond. As part of that renovation, we have added new gates and new facilities. All of the design work that's been done since 1996 and all the new construction incorporates the highest level of energy efficiency and renovation that we can possibly build into the facility. Representative Killen is exactly right. When you open doors and close doors, particularly today, jet loaders open and a blast of cold air comes into the building. All of that is calculated with blowers and ventilation systems. We've literally replaced every ballast in the terminal building as far as light efficiency and have partnered with Xcel Energy. And it actually benefited because we get significant rebates from Xcel Energy and so forth for all those improvements that we make at the airport. We've also evaluated the consumption of the various fuels that we have. We have the ability, through our own power plant at the airport, to use a variety of fuels, natural gas, oil, and natural gas, and so forth. And as a result, we evaluate and we compare and take a look at the most efficient ways to operate the facility, how to stop the loss of heat from inside the building or cool air in the summertime, how to stop the bad air on the outside from getting in and disrupting and making the place uncomfortable. One of the more recent projects that we're working on at the present time is that we are competing, and have not made this as a decision yet. We are currently competing and bidding for the Ford Motor Plant Dam on the Mississippi River. This is nothing but an absolute blessing of green. This is green energy. That dam generates about 18 megawatts of power. The airport requires about 15 megawatts of power to operate on an annual basis. Our goal is to attempt to bid, if it makes economic sense and that's being evaluated, to acquire and successfully obtain the ownership of the dam and use that as an energy supply, not only for the Airports Commission, but quite possibly for the new business district that will develop where the Ford plant currently is and also into the Xcel Energy energy grid within the metropolitan area. Bottom line is that even as we speak today, we are doing the analysis to look for additional measures, additional efforts to try to improve efficiency, reduce the consumption of the fossil fuels, and maximize our ability to use energy responsibly.
Representative Kaelin.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that it's been part of the economic analysis, and it sounds like there's been a decent degree of savings. And I have a couple of, first I'd just like to throw a couple of things in the hopper to think about.
Sure.
One is, I imagine with some pretty massive central heating plants and central cooling plants, that cogeneration be a key part of the analysis and conversation moving ahead. And certainly, I'd love to help see if there are some barriers to making that happen in ways that we can remove those barriers. So, you know, a lot more out of the input that's coming in, a lot more efficient use of that input. I'm also curious about whether you can provide some savings figures for the how much has been saved by taking the efficiency measures that you have so far, vis-a-vis replacing ballasts, using more efficient lighting, you know, trying to limit infiltration, that kind of, those kinds of steps.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kaelin, I've got the notes. I'll go back and we'll have someone contact you, and I may offer to any member, but Representative Kaelin, if you've got time, come on up. Give us a call. Come on out, and we'll actually put you in touch with you. You've got some obvious expertise in this area and a strong interest. And I would love to engage you in sometime when you're not quite so busy, maybe off session. Come on out and spend some time with our energy management people and take a look at our facilities. I think you would find it interesting. And quite frankly, if you've got some ideas that would benefit or move us forward toward better use and more efficiency, I would welcome that.
Great. Thank you. Look forward to it.
Representative Hortman had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about the actual airplanes and the potential for reducing greenhouse gases from that source. And that might be a question that's more appropriately asked of somebody from Northwest Airlines. But do you know if there's any way to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions in flights? I know with rail service, we're looking at, you know, different types of locomotives that use less diesel. But I don't know in an airplane what's possible.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in fact, it is possible, and it's taking place. It's a slower process. As airlines improve their fleets and as they acquire more efficient, energy-efficient airplanes, that is, airplanes that consume less fuel, and there are, by the way, dramatic improvements in the amount of fuel consumed by airplanes over the last 10 or 15 years. But as fleets are replaced and new airplanes come into inventories, you can see significant savings in fuel consumption, which immediately equates to emissions, which means that we have less impact on our entire atmosphere and reducing greenhouse impacts. But there's no question about it. Air transportation at a national level does contribute to significant impacts on our environment. The industry is aware of it. Engine manufacturers, aircraft manufacturers are continuously working on improvements. To be really frank with you, the local airport has a tough time having a lot of influence in that area. However, we have an awareness. We've measured the air quality. We report it to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And one bit of good news for you is that in the last report that was submitted to the PCA, which was done by an independent agency, in measuring the air quality around the airport and measuring air quality in other areas of the metropolitan airport, area away from the airport, there was no definitive difference in the quality of air near the airport or away from the airport. And that's good news.
Mr. Chair, just a comment on that. That speaks to the level of congestion we have on the freeways around the airport.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not an automobile person. I'm an aviation person. I understand.
You may. Any further questions? Mm-hmm. Not. Thank you.
We're going a little long, Mr. Chair. But it's fine. Just let me point out to you, there's a map labeled 1996 noise contour map. The red line is the 1996 65 decibel noise exposure line. And based on federal guidelines, anyone who lives inside that very thin red line on the map lives inside a federally defined noise impact zone. That line has changed in shape because the bulge that goes over the city of Bloomington is now shifted more directly south across the river and towards Burnsville, Apple Valley, Eagan, and so forth. That's because of the new opening of the new north-south runway. And as a result, that's a bit of a shift. But the point is that all of the red boxes that you see, that represents the 7,700 homes that the Airports Commission has insulated. And if you'll notice, we're attempting to follow that red line to make certain that if you live inside the identified noise impact zone, you are eligible and could receive, if you chose to do so, the noise mitigation program. And we actually, to be honest, I'm quite proud of that because there's no other airport director in the nation that can look at a map like this and look at the impact and the improvements and say that we have tried our best in spending that $340 million plus to do what we think is appropriate for the neighbors near the airport. We also recognize and know that we're a close-in airport. It's convenient, but it's also congesting to people. So with that, we'll move on from noise, Mr. Chair, and I'll finish up the introduction here, and we'll decide what you do next.
Mr. Further questions on that particular? One thing, Mr. Hamill.
Yes.
I have tough time finding that red line, as you know.
I'll tell you, Mr. Chair, I'll come back next time, and I'll bring a larger picture of a bolder red line. It's there. Economic impact of the airport, let me just wrap up quickly and tell you that the airport is a significant and a very important economic generator for the community. I'll start out by telling you that 3,000 acres of property is the most important economic piece of property in the state of Minnesota. I know of no other piece of real estate of that size that generates more direct economic contribution to the economy of the state or the region. 153,000 jobs are generated by the activities of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. They are not people who work on the airport. These are people who work on the airport, of which it's about 20,000, 18,000, and all the secondary jobs and all the services provided on the airport by businesses in our community. We have about $6 billion of annual personal income contributed by operations at the airport, $10.7 billion in total business revenue. This is a number that I use most often because it's large, but because I think it's comparative to other airports around the country. $1.3 billion in local purchases, $626 million contributed to state and local taxes by the operations of the facility. So it's a significant economic generator, and I know of no other piece of real estate in the state, and we've looked, that has more economic impact than the 3,000 acres at the airport. Top-notch air service is the next one. We are the 15th largest U.S. metropolitan statistical area in the nation. NSP ranks as the second number two airport in nonstop destinations per 100,000 passengers. To put in more common language, we have a disproportionate share of direct flights to destinations in the United States and access to international markets than any city in America of our size, or metropolitan area of our size, and that is because we are the world headquarters of Northwest Airlines. We are the headquarters of Sun Country Airlines. We have been the headquarters of Masada, which is now in bankruptcy but being acquired by Northwest, and they will continue to operate as an airline. And headquarters of Champion Air, which is a local charter company, much smaller than the companies we've talked about. But the point is, we're the only airport in the United States that is the home of four airline companies providing a variety of aviation services. We can virtually go anywhere in the country nonstop several times a day. And that is a luxury that a metropolitan community of 2-3 quarter million don't enjoy anywhere else in the nation. Secondly, 90% of our travelers have access to competitive nonstop or one-stop service. And let me just talk about competition for one moment to tell you that one of the questions that we receive all the time is, why is it that Northwest Airlines is such a dominant player in the Minneapolis-St. Paul market? And why is there not more competition? We have 13 airline companies that serve Minneapolis-St. Paul with scheduled air service. The airlines that are not here are names like JetBlue and, more importantly, Southwest Airlines. I'll simply tell you that I have visited Southwest Airlines at least once and usually twice a year for the last 14 years in an effort to encourage Southwest to serve Minneapolis-St. Paul. We have the gates. We have the availability. We have the services. There's nothing that stops Southwest from coming to Minneapolis-St. Paul except a decision at the Southwest Airlines boardroom in Dallas, Texas. And they've made a decision not to serve this community for whatever reasons that have not been shared with me. But we have never, as an airport authority, ever denied or declined air service access to the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, and in fact are recruiting both domestic and international airline companies to serve our community.
Representative.
Question. If Southwest wanted to come in, how many gates are you prepared to give them?
Mr. Sheridan was amazing. The question I would ask Southwest is, how many gates do you want? And I've asked that question, and what they've said that they need two or three gates, and we have two or three gates immediately adjacent to one another available today. Today. In the Humphrey Terminal Building, and with as a result of this agreement, in the Lindbergh Terminal Building as well. So it's not a gate availability issue whatsoever. In fact, we have an agreement with the airlines that basically say to Northwest, if you have gates, and we need those to encourage competition, we can force you on a 90-day notice to give up those gates and turn them over to a competitor to encourage competition to drive airfare and pricing down so that the Northwest doesn't have a price dominance in the community. But we are available today to provide those gates to any carrier that wishes to enter the market.
Okay, so you could give somebody
yes.
up to nine gates?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do. Efficient management. All I will tell you is that we are recognized around the country as a leader in the way we operate the facility. When we talk about efficiency, we have one of the lowest staffs, if not the lowest staff of airport employees of any large airport in the country, including airports that are significantly smaller than we are. We are consistently working toward cutting our costs. The whole reason for this airline negotiation process that's coming to an end that the board decided on yesterday and airlines are now considering is an attempt to try to reduce the cost of government, to make the airport more competitively attractive, to encourage airline companies to serve Minneapolis-St. Paul and not make price an issue. I'm not going to go into the details of the measurement, but it's entitled or called cost per plane passenger. And what it really is a figure that is a calculation applied to all airports that determines how much it costs Northwest Airlines to transport one passenger to the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport, either an arriving or departing passenger or a connecting passenger en route to an ultimate destination. To give you an idea of numbers, the average, the national average is about $9.25 per passenger as a national level for medium and large hub airports in the United States. Minneapolis-St. Paul today is about $6.95 per passenger, and with this agreement, we're going to drop it down to about $5.25 per passenger. That makes us one of the lower-cost airports in the nation. We're already one of the lower-cost when you take a look at the entire community of airports. But with this negotiation we just completed, we're going to cut the cost of operation even further to ultimately save airlines such as Northwest money. They're in bankruptcy. We can't ignore that fact. But also make us price competitive for new entrants to consider coming to Minneapolis-St. Paul. By comparison, by the way, the other hub operated by Northwest is Detroit. We're striving toward $5.25 per passenger. Detroit today is at $5.04. That is not a significant variation to draw traffic away. It's more a matter of decisions of Northwest Airlines. But these costs are important to keep in mind. Awards, I'm not going to read them to you. I will simply tell you that I am extraordinarily privileged and proud to have the staff that I have. There are people who have performed in an extraordinary manner. They are professionals who are respected in their professional industry. And the awards that we've received, second best large airport in the Americas, third best airport in the world for customer service and satisfaction, second best in the world for domestic travel, best concessions program design, best airport in North America. These are all awards that we've received in the last couple of years. Our $3.1 billion expansion program has paid off to make us attractive, an airport that people enjoy using, and we're trying to provide the best quality and level of service that we possibly can. Next slide is a regional approach. We've already talked about the reliever airport system, so I won't talk about that. Simply said that we do have responsibility directed by you to manage those airport systems. We're trying to separate large from small airplanes to provide services to everyone. And on the last page is a MAC system map that shows the location of our reliever airports. I will simply tell you that we have significant construction programs taking place at the present time at the St. Paul Downtown Airport with a dike at the St. Paul Downtown Airport around the river. We have construction programs proposed at the Anoka County Airport in the northern suburbs. We have a program that's partially completed at the Flying Cloud Airport for expansion of the runway at the Flying Cloud Airport and in the western suburban areas, and just completed a $3.1 billion expansion in MSP. So we're trying to provide the services and the aviation system that the community needs as it continues to grow and progress in the future. That is my 10-minute introduction, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how much time we have, but I am also here today to talk about our financial overview. And with me today is Susan Warner Dooley, who is the Commission's Deputy Executive Director for Finance and Administration, as well as Mitch Killian, who is our legislative representative, whom you all have met and know. Mitch is here all the time to be available to you as a resource for any questions you may have.
Are there any questions? We do have, we're pretty much on schedule, we assume that would be about this, but are there questions from the members? Representative Hartman.
Just a quick one. I saw in your materials you said that you were using flex fuel in a few of your vehicles.
Yes.
The MAX fleet, and six of them so far and 11 are coming online in 2007. I was wondering if you know how many vehicles are in your fleet.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's a tricky question to answer because vehicles come in a variety of sizes. And we have about 400 pieces of heavy equipment rolling stock in the form of snow plows, blowers, significant pieces of equipment that quite frankly are not eligible and can't participate in those sorts of programs. These are large dual diesel engined equipment pieces that I don't think you're referring to. As far as pickup trucks, passenger vehicles, and so forth, I can't tell you the size of our fleet, but I'll get that information for you. We're in the process of moving to an E85 fleet implementation. I don't want to lead you to believe that it's going to be the entire fleet, but we're experimenting with the weather conditions, on-field environmental issues, take a look at how we can implement a more efficient, fuel-efficient vehicles on the airport. But the majority of the consumption of fuels for rolling stock vehicles is tied up in the wintertime with large trucks, snow plows, blowers, snow throwers, and that sort of equipment. So I realize it's not a direct answer, but we're working on it.
Thank you. That's great.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chairman. My next question is probably a familiar one to you. regarding access to the public and your facilities, meeting facilities. So for the new members, if you want to go to a MAC commission meeting, you actually have to go through security. They meet above the Chili's restaurant in the terminal. And you know, yesterday, going to the meeting, the parking lot was full. So then we were directed another mile and a half to the Humphrey Terminal, where I parked and then took a shuttle, which dropped us off at the far end of the airport, where then you have to take the train, and then you go in the tunnel underneath, and then up the escalator through security. You have your ID, and then it's as if you're boarding a plane. So you have a little slip of paper saying you're going to the MAC meeting. You give them your driver's license, and then voila, 45 minutes later, arrival at the MAC commission meeting. It's extraordinary that a public agency would have this kind of barrier to public involvement. And I wonder, we've talked in the past about maybe holding one meeting per year in a noise, particularly if noise is on the agenda, in a noise-affected area, maybe the Richfield City Hall or a community center in Minneapolis. Any thoughts about maybe doing something like that, so that, again, increasing access, public involvement in your deliberations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winstein, you're right. You have quite a tour of the airport if you have to come to one of our meetings. And it's a process that is a result of, quite frankly, the events of 9/11, the Transportation Security Administration, Homeland Security. We are required to do a complete check of every person who comes into the facility and goes through the security at the airport. That makes it a process that is time-consuming and difficult. I'm going to divide your question into two pieces. The parking situation, having to be redirected to the Humphrey Terminal as a result of just simply filling up the 18,000 parking spaces in the main terminal building complex. There's virtually no more room to build any more parking facilities, and as a result, overflow demand puts us into the Humphrey Terminal building or to an off-airport parking accommodation not operated by the MAC. That's a frustration for travelers who are pushing the timeline on a ticket and are going to miss a flight, and several do when they come to the airport and realize there's no parking available and they've got to now go to Humphrey or someplace else and most likely not going to catch their flight. But actually processing through the airport, there's no question that it is a screening process. You have to present identification that is run through a computer to do a quick check on your record, and then you're given an authorization to proceed to the meeting. That is required by federal law. The Airports Commission has virtually no say and no alternative to that process. In response to last year's concerns expressed and the year before, we've done a couple of things. One, I will tell you first of all that we are open to having a meeting at some other location in the community. A little bit of the difficulty is that when you start to move the commission meetings around, there are folks who don't necessarily get the notification, but just know that we meet in the chambers on the third Monday of every month, and people just simply come to those meetings. Not large numbers, by the way. In fact, relatively small numbers of people come to our meetings. But folks who regularly come and attend, and we'd have to probably work pretty hard to make sure everyone knew where that meeting was being moved to. But we could, in fact, conduct occasional commission meetings in the community around the airport. And our chairman, Jack Lenders, has indicated and talked to me that that's certainly worthy of consideration. I'll also tell you, more importantly, that I have directed the staff to take a look at ways of modifying access to our commission meeting chambers so that, in fact, people do not have to go through security screening to have access to our meetings. We've got a couple of alternative plans to build new facilities outside of security, plans to accommodate some sort of a passageway that would be secured from the unsecured side into the secured area, but being enclosed within a capsule so that you can't pass into the secured area without being screened. These alternatives are expensive but not beyond our capability. We're talking in excess of $1 to $2 million for a modest modification, and $3 to $5 million to accommodate the construction of replacement chambers. We've also conducted meetings in our headquarters offices over on 28th Avenue out of the terminal complex. Quite frankly, over the years, we've tried to hold our meetings in the terminal because we believe that our commissioners, who are our policy decision makers, ought to have to go through the facility and look at and use and be part of the main terminal facility and main operation. Otherwise, I'm afraid they become a little bit out of touch with the day-in and day-out activities at the airport. But certainly, our job is not to create barriers, it's to provide accommodation. We've looked at alternatives. We're continuing to investigate those. Nigel Finney on my staff has been involved in construction for 32 years at the airport. We have some proposals and some alternatives. It's a matter of assessing, evaluating, and deciding to how to finance and proceeding with some of those programs. But we have addressed the issue, Representative, and we hope to make it a more pleasant experience for people.
Thank you.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just, Representative Hornstein, I'm just a country bumpkin, but I think there's some sort of, isn't there some sort of mass transit that might make the process a little easier for getting to the airport? If not, we should build it, but to another point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, we have one line, and if we can build the central corridor, then it would be so easy to get from here to the airport. But
wow.
Absent that, we need to build out the system. So
as visionary.
And the rush line would be really helpful.
Amen. So more to Representative Hornstein's key point, and just seeking a short answer because we can talk for hours about this part, but as a designer, one of the things that really struck me in October of 2001 is how poorly we anticipated as a community of designers, but also just as a community, the dramatic change. And I'm wondering if you can just share with us, again, really briefly, whether you feel like the ever-changing security stuff that comes out from Homeland Security and the directives, whether they're starting to settle out a little bit here, or we can make some long-term decisions about how to more effectively manage the traffic flow, the pedestrian traffic flow, in other words. I was just, really quickly, I was in an airport about a month ago. My fiance and I went to L.A. for a wedding, and literally you would stand, you walk in the door, and you were in line to then have your boarding pass on and be checked, to then go up the stairs to be in line. There was no waiting point whatsoever, and you can easily imagine how I suppose this works, but with a line that extends way deep out into the street, not exactly the safest way of providing security. If you can just, 10 seconds, are we settling down here to be able to make some long-term decisions, or are we still anticipating more and more changes? And
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I will tell you that I believe that we are going to be involved in continuous process and continuous change. It's going to take another catastrophic terrorist event someplace in the United States, sometime in the future, whether it's an airport or a train station or a shopping mall or whatever. But there is a threat that does exist, and we believe that we have prepared the airport as best we can given the circumstances. But it's going to be a continually changing process of increasing and decreasing the levels of security at the airport, the orange versus the red versus the yellow. I would tell you that I think we're at a constant state of orange at the present time. The next threat has a significant impact on the accessibility of the airport to passengers and doesn't permit vehicles to proceed toward the terminal building complex or use the parking ramps and parking facilities. Dramatic impacts. The federal government is aware of this. But we're going to have to continue to be flexible, continue to respond. As a wrap-up, I would tell you that we have taken all the actions I believe we can as an airport to try to protect people who use our facilities. We have nationally one of the best security screening processes in the country. On average, a person spends less than 15 minutes from the time they get out of their car until the time they're through security at MSP getting through, unlike many airports where you spend 30, 40, 50, up to an hour during rush hours waiting in line to process through a facility. So I think we're doing a pretty good job. We've taken actions that I don't care to discuss here to prevent a possible threat from happening again, but I believe it's going to be a fluid issue.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Not Mr. Hamill, you have some financial people, is that correct?
I do. I'm going to invite Susan Warner Dooley to join me, and we're going together to talk to you a little bit about our finances. It's not all that complicated, if you've heard it for 30 years, but for the first time it gets to be a little bit busy. So I'm going to ask Susan to take us through the flow of funds, which is the first chart on the document that's bound with the plastic cover. And she's going to talk to you a little bit about how we establish our funds and how the revenue and expenses flow through the various funds of the Airports Commission. This does not take a great deal of time, but it's an introduction for you to understand kind of where the money comes from and how we use it. And then I'll take over and kind of go through some of the larger, broader numbers.
Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself, please?
Yes, right. I'm Susan Warner Dooley. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for Finance and Administration with the MAC. like to flow through this complicated chart. I will try to very much simplify it. The first column on the left is the operating fund. It is basically the operating dollars that come in each year to the airport system, which consists primarily of airline rates and charges, concession fees, other fees that we're charging, such as rent, and then interest earnings. Those dollars will go first to pay our operating expenses, as you would expect. Personnel, administrative, professional services for outside consultants, maintenance, equipment purchases. The money that we have left over then will first go to pay our debt service, which is the middle column of the chart. In addition to our operating funds that come in, we have capitalized interest or other funds that come in as part of our debt program. I won't go into details, but we use those money to pay principal and interest on our outstanding bonds. And then the additional money that we have left after we've paid our operating expenses as well as our debt service, we will put that into our construction fund. And it's our contribution, our internal funds that we use to pay for capital projects for the airport system to try to hold down on what we use, what we have to issue debt. We will combine these monies with, again, the bond proceeds as well as passenger facility charges that are collected by the airlines on our behalf as part of the ticket price, as well as any aid that we will get from the federal and state governments. And we use those to pay for capital projects, not only at MSP, but as well as at our reliever airports.
That was a quick overview of the way money flows at the commission. And I think there's, for those who are financially oriented, you have a lot of questions, and we'd be happy to provide some additional information and speak to the questions you may have. If you flip the next page, you see a pie chart that basically is titled Operating Revenue. We basically secure most of our revenue from three sources, actually all of it from three sources. Airline rates and charges, about $87 million a year. Our concessions, that is the food and beverage retail sales activities in the terminal building, about $113,400,000 a year. And other sources, about $52,400,000 a year, for total operating revenues of about $777,000. If you flip the next page, we're going to take those three categories apart and first talk about airline rates and charges, which contributes the $87 million portion. We basically charge the airline companies a fee to land at the airport. They pay a fee of a dollar and so many cents, a dollar and 40 cents or so, for 1,000 pounds of landed weight. To put that in practical perspective for you, a typical airliner weighs about 150,000 pounds. At a dollar and a half per landing, that's somewhere near about $225 per landing for a typical commercial airliner. Last year, we had over 250,000 aircraft land at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. We also charge ramp fees at the 6% level. A ramp fee, basically, about $6 million, $5.5 million a year. We charge airlines to park their airplanes on the piece of concrete at the gate. To be occupying that space, they have to pay rental fees to the commission. We charge them for terminal rentals. That's 34% of the total, or about almost $30 million a year in revenue to the commission. They pay for the gates. They pay for the concourses and the walkways through a community charges charge. They pay for their ticket counters. They pay for the baggage carousels. They pay for all the office space. They pay for all the facilities infrastructure behind the wall. That is the baggage conveyor systems, all the mechanisms and infrastructure necessary to run an airline company is part of this terminal rentals provision. Rentals and fees that they pay for various facilities and buildings and obligations they have toward the commission. For example, few people realize that most of the hangars and the buildings at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport are owned by the Metropolitan Airports Commission and leased back to the airlines. There are a couple of exceptions most recently, but basically when you look at the hangars of Northwest Airlines, those are MAC properties built by Metropolitan Airports Commission with public money, leased back to the airlines with a marginal profit and a cost to cover maintenance and depreciation to take care of those facilities. So basically those various categories are how we come up with the $87 million of airline rates and charges revenue at the airport. Concessions is broken into several categories. Parking, which is our largest single source of concession revenue. People are shocked, I think, to learn that we generate about $69 million a year in citizens parking their cars in our ramp. It is the single largest source of revenue that we have overall. Auto rentals, another $14 million. Food and beverage, $13 million. Retail services, $11 million. And other, for a total of $113.5 million of revenue. And then another other, the larger other, lobby fees, building rentals, labor airport incomes, reimbursable expenses, utilities, all of those generate another $52 million of activity. We can go into greater detail if you wish, but it gives you a snapshot of where the money comes from at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. Turning to expenses, where do we spend the money? Basically, we have a variety of categories, personnel, administrative expenses, professional services, utilities, and so forth, and you can see the breakdown. Total expenses, $243 million, $150,000. So a significant amount of expense, and we do not go into great detail on the expenses, but simply break them out by category, and if you've got questions, we'd be happy to talk with you about each of those expense areas. Note the higher depreciation at $118,500,000, direct result of the construction and the improvements made at the airport. We depreciate our facilities. A significant part of the expense of operating our airport is this single expense item alone. Next page, I talked about the employee levels at the airport. Personnel costs are one of the highest that we have to deal with. Interestingly enough, we have a total of 560 and a half employees who work at the Airports Commission. It's a very short person. And that is a very, very small staff in comparison to many airports. There are airports that are smaller than MAC that have twice as many employees, and that is not an unusual scenario. What we've been able to do is consolidate and organize the organization. And quite frankly, I think maximize productivity of our airport staff. We have our own police department, our own fire department, field maintenance like a public works department in the city. We have our administrative staff and our executive and our leadership managers and so forth. But that overall workforce is probably close to half of what the average is around the country for the top 33 largest airports in the nation. And we're working very hard to hold those costs down. However, I've advised the commission most recently that we're going to have to start bumping that up a little bit, only because we actually have limited depth in several areas where if we lost an employee, that employee would take with them significant knowledge and expertise that we simply haven't got I consider to be an acceptable backstop for in a couple of critical areas. So we're taking action in that area. The next slide provides you with a snapshot of our debt. We show you our debt in 1998 before we began actually spending the money on our $3.1 billion expansion program, and we show you the debt in 2007. We are currently, the overall general airport indebtedness, about $1.6 billion as a result of our construction program. General obligation debt at the present time, about $290 million, and commercial paper, about $52 million. We're talking about a great deal of money. But I'll also tell you that in comparison to most airports in the country, this is very manageable and very typical of what you see around the United States, particularly with airports that are under major construction programs at the present time. We believe that we have a solid financial operation, that we have protected the taxpayers from any serious threat or risk of having to pick up this public debt or obligation, and in fact have negotiated into our agreements and managed our finances such that we are protected through 2020 by the airline agreement that we're working on at the present time. Most importantly, you need to also know that if, in fact, Northwest Airlines were to file bankruptcy and liquidate, we have the financial resources and the ability to continue to meet all of our financial obligations through 2020, given that we will generate new revenues from new carriers that come into the community and also seek non-aeronautical revenue streams as well as part of a recovery plan that we have for funding our resources to make certain that the taxpayers of Minnesota don't assume this burden in the future. I happen to believe, by the way, that Northwest is not going to liquidate or go out of business. They're going to stay in Minneapolis-St. Paul. They should come out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy sometime in the second quarter of this year, and I think that our current financial model has an appropriate, responsive plan to meeting airline needs and airport needs looking to the future through 2020. The next slide is basically a look at our annual debt service payments. Again, 1998 is given as a comparison compared to 2007 to show you before and after the major expansion of the airport. General obligation revenue bonds are in blue, about $32 million a year. General airport revenue bonds are about $110 million a year, so substantial payments being made. And these payments are guaranteed and insured by the airlines as part of this agreement. I'm not going to go through this list of projects, but I do want you to be aware of the fact that there have been numerous projects that have been underway at the airport and continue on an annual basis. This is just a snapshot of what they look like as we project the projects to be completed between now and 2010, or another $2.8 billion of investment in the property over time from this day moving forward. By the way, I should say it differently. From 1996, with the beginning of the $3 billion expansion, through 2010, this is the total expenditure. While the numbers don't seem to add up, I tell you about $3.1 billion, we show $2.8. There are a variety of rehabilitation projects and other miscellaneous projects that contribute to this number as well. Next page, sources of funding for our programs, for our 2010 program. We actually do secure federal aid from the federal government through the Aviation Trust Fund. These are not general tax revenues. However, they are revenues that come from people who purchase airline tickets or ship air freight by cargo. There's a ticket tax and a waybill tax charged to passengers and freight that are paid into the Aviation Trust Fund. We aggressively pursue our share of money from the Aviation Trust Fund for our programs. I will tell you that we don't get back anywhere near what we contribute to the Aviation Trust Fund, but in comparison to our contemporaries in the industry, we get more of that money back than most anybody else. We receive some state aid, about almost $10 million. And we issue revenue bonds in terms of $1 billion. The passenger facility charge, both existing debt and new debt, and pay-as-you-go in revenue, is money that we get from passengers who get on board an airplane and depart Minneapolis-St. Paul. If you are a user of our system, we charge you for the services that you use. You park your car in our parking ramp, you come into the terminal building and you buy a cup of coffee, you buy a magazine, you buy a shirt or a blouse or a pair of shoes. You pay into a percentage of our revenue stream as a user of our facility. We also charge you $4.50 added to your ticket for every departing passenger that passes through our airport. Both the people who live and reside in Minneapolis-St. Paul, referred to as origination destination passengers, as well as every connecting passenger who's passing through this airport en route between New York and Seattle, Washington, on Northwest, stopping in Minneapolis for a plane change. So when you multiply those 37 million total passengers, divided by two in rough numbers, down to about 18 million passengers, those 18 million passengers give us $4.50 a person when they board an airplane to depart. We take that money and invest that into the infrastructure and improvement of the airport, a significant financial economic importance to us. Imagine what would happen if all the connecting passengers disappeared because Northwest Airlines decided to no longer hub out of Minneapolis-St. Paul. 56% of all of our passengers are connecting passengers, people who do not want to be here, didn't plan to come to Minneapolis-St. Paul, but are here by virtue of the flight that took them here to make a plane connection to their final destination. About 44% of our passengers are Minneapolis-St. Paul destination passengers, people who want to be here, people who probably parked their car in our parking ramp and got on an airplane and flew to some point and came back a day or two or a week later. So important distinctions on PFC. We use commercial paper for short-term financial needs, and we always carry some commercial paper debt, and then we generate our own funds through rates and charges and year-end unrestricted cash funds that we just plow back into or reinvest back into the airport as part of our total operation. Next page shows you a breakout of our current agreement we have with the airlines through 2010. What it shows you is that we have continued passenger growth forecast for the airport. The red represents the actual level of traffic activity at the airport, and you can see that we're down in our overall passenger activity for 2005 and are forecasting to be below our projections through 2010. That's a direct reflection and function of decisions made by Northwest Airlines to cut back their operation, reduce the transfer of passengers to Minneapolis-St. Paul, and reduce the overall number of flights that use our facility. Getting near the end, our cost per plane passenger, we've already talked about that. Bottom line is that we are currently somewhere in the vicinity of about $5, coming up on $6 a head. That's going to go a little bit higher and then come back down again. If we're able to effectively, the negotiation we just completed, that line will level off and drop down to about $5.25. And finally, there's a graphic on the last page that shows you where we stack up in comparison to other airports across the United States of comparable size, or so to Minneapolis-St. Paul. The various colors identify the various rates and charges. Let me just point out that the current level of charge to Minneapolis passengers is the middle red line at $6.43. With the budget as currently is calculated, it grows to $6.93. We talked about that earlier. If we implement the airline relief plan that we negotiated and passed through our board yesterday, and if it's accepted by the airlines, that $6.93 projected will drop down to $6.01 or so. Okay, $6? I thought it was...
This is what we did with the budget.
I'm sorry. Explain that.
Okay. What it is, this is actually a chart we put together in December. We took an initial step in December to reduce the airline rates and charges just for 2007. Right. And this is just my problem, wrong chart here. At that point, with the steps we took just in 2007, we reduced our cost per EP down to 601. Now, with the additional savings that we have as part of the package that was approved yesterday, that would drop us down to the $5 figure that Jeff was talking about.
Mr. Chairman, that's a very, very quick run through of our finances and background to the MAC. Whatever questions you would like to approach us, please, we're prepared to answer.
Representative Hausman had a question.
Mr. Chair, the operating expenses, is that large depreciation percentage, is that typical or is that unique to your industry?
It is, it's typical in the industry for airports that have completed large cap improvement programs. And let me just elaborate a little bit. In 1989, you and Minnesota Legislature directed us through the Airport Planning Act to begin this dual-track planning process. And what that did was move us aggressively ahead of the industry overall, take a look at our needs, and should we stay at the current site and expand or build a new airport someplace else. The decision was made in 1996 to stay where we are and grow the airport because we have the infrastructure and the ability to expand the current site to meet our projected growth needs through 2020. We then began a $3 billion expansion program, and that was ahead of most of our contemporaries in the airline airport industry. What's happened now is that now we're in 2007, we have pretty well completed all of our expansion. That expansion includes 45 gate additions to the Lindbergh Terminal to include Concourse A, Concourse B, and expansion of Concourse C. It is a new inbound-outbound roadway system. It is doubling the parking capacity at the airport in the Lindbergh Terminal Complex. It is the construction of the Hubert H. Humphrey Terminal Building, the $100 million parking ramp in the Humphrey Terminal Facility, the current $80 million parking ramp under construction of the Humphrey Terminal Facility, the entire Humphrey ramp, the new runway 1735 on the west side of the airport, and our $86 million contribution to the LRT that passes underneath the airport, coming down from Minneapolis, below the airport to the Lindbergh Terminal, and then to the south end of the airport, stopping at the Humphrey and then on down to the Mall of America. All of those projects together are what cost about $3 billion. That is now behind us, and these numbers, these cost per plane passenger figures, represent our obligation after we have assumed all of that additional new debt. What's interesting, what you need to understand is that we're working very hard to stay one of the lower cost airports. Over time, we will improve that position and become, in comparison to the industry, even lower cost as a percentage. The reason why is because we are already well below the national average, and as all of our competitors and contemporaries build out facilities and spend money, their rates and charges are going to begin to accelerate, while ours are now fixed at about the $5 to $6 level, making us a very, very attractive airport in the near and longer term future.
And then, Mr. Chair, to the largest amount of your concessions budget, the parking, is there a saturation point for an airport where, you know, you build and build and build parking, but, you know when to stop?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, we cannot build any more parking in the Lindbergh Terminal area. That is completely and fully developed. We can't go higher because of height restrictions due to aircraft operations. So basically the 18,500 parking spaces that we have in the Lindbergh Terminal Complex that were filled, as Representative Orsi indicated last Wednesday, is the capacity of our main Lindbergh Terminal facility. We're building additional parking accommodation at the Humphrey Terminal Building, and by the end of this year we will have, actually the next fall, we'll have an additional 10,000... Take that back. Additional 4,000 or 5,000 spaces on part of the new construction, and a total of about 9,000 spaces at the Humphrey Terminal Building, available for travelers. We are looking at other locations in the airport for potential further remote parking accommodation. We also have folks who are competitors off airport who provide parking services as well, and we'll see that expand in the future as well. Parking is a huge revenue generator. We count on those dollars to meet several of our financial obligations. We believe that we continue growing demand for parking on the airport as the airport continues to grow toward that 50 million passengers a year. And we quite frankly welcome the LRT because that has provided an access to the airport for both employees and travelers that has been significantly helpful in our operation. That was a long-winded answer, basically to say there is a capacity limitation, no more room to build. We're looking for more land.
Mr. Hamill, when do you expect to pay off all your bonds, or how do you retire your bonds?
To amortize over approximately 30 years.
30 years?
Yeah.
I expect to be retired by that time, Mr. Chair, so I probably won't be here to write the final check.
You expect to put more on, too? Or? Any further questions?
I have one.
Oh, Representative Hartman.
On the landing fees portion of the operating budget revenue, you said they were by weight for like 1,000 pounds.
Right.
Are all the airplanes weighed at some point, or do the airlines provide you with an estimate?
Mr. Chairman, President Hartman, there's a great big scale on the end of every runway. And when you stop momentarily, we weigh you and we charge. No. There's a calculation known as max takeoff gross weight for all commercial airliners. It's a federal requirement as part of calculating the performance envelope for takeoff and landing activity. And what we do is base a calculation based on the max takeoff gross weight of the airplane to calculate that landing weight figure. And it's pretty standardized throughout the industry. Most airports charge a landing fee. Some get as high as $2 and $3. We're down around $1.50. Some airports are lower depending on how they generate revenue. And what this really comes down to in the airport business is how you decide to establish your methodology for collecting money. At the end of the day, we have to figure out some way to come up with about $250 million a year to meet all of our obligations. We can do that by charging concessionaires in the terminal building, charging more on landing fees, charge more or less on rentals. It's a balance that's calculated through our finance department, looking at industry standards. And quite frankly, this new negotiation we just finished has taken a look at that methodology and done a recalculation on a better way, quite frankly, looking into the future to manage our funds, give us more financial stability, and provide greater assurances that the community is protected from any future risk through our new methodologies. So it's constantly looked at, evaluated, and assessed. It's a good question.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, you've been extremely generous with your time. The airport is a complex environment. I know that there's a serious concern about noise. I know you have serious concerns about this agreement that we've just presented to the airline industry. We are more than happy to come to you and discuss all of those issues and those questions. I will tell you that it's not a comfortable discussion to have. Noise is a challenging, difficult issue that is simply not going to go away. It's getting better, but not going to go away. The financial implications and this negotiation we just finished is complicated. We spent a year in negotiation with the airlines, spending anywhere from 1 to 2 sessions a week, each session being 3 to 4 hours in length, in serious negotiations since last August 1st. It's complicated stuff. We've run 25 to 30 different financial models as a way of assessing the impacts and complications and what we can do. We'd be happy to present the results of that to you. But I have to tell you, in all honesty, I think it'd be very challenging for you to grasp all of the nuances and implications of this process. Rates and charges and negotiations are a normal part of airport management administration. They're accomplished by airports in every airport in the country. And in fact, Detroit and Memphis just both finished significant rate cuts for the airlines, just like we have attempted to do, which is what most airports in the nation are doing to retain and keep air service and try to grow a new service. With that summary, Mr. Chair, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hamill. One comment, I don't think you really reiterated too much, is the fact that if we lose the hub status of Northwest Airlines, that's pretty critical, isn't it?
This will be a longer discussion. I'll keep it very brief. Northwest Airlines is 80% of the operation of the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. They used to be about 45%, but back in 1985, 1986, we saw the acquisition of Republic Airlines by Northwest, and all of a sudden we had 2 40% shares combined into 1 80% share. We are routinely criticized for letting that kind of market dominance take place. And we've been criticized for not having an aggressive competition plan and encouraging competitors. But in fact, there are only about 2 or 3 airlines in the nation that don't serve Minneapolis-St. Paul. Northwest Airlines is one of those folks that you kind of love to hate on occasion. The reality is, however, that they bring thousands of jobs to Minneapolis-St. Paul and to the state of Minnesota. They bring incredible air service, giving this community connectivity to domestic and international markets that we simply could not sustain had we not been a headquartered hub operation. If Northwest Airlines were to leave the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, our traffic levels would drop at the end of the day by about 40 to 45%. Our revenues would drop, and more significantly, that $10.7 billion economic engine that we have out there would drop significantly, and it would have a distinct and direct impact on the financial stability and future of the state of Minnesota. That is a huge responsibility from my perspective as a public administrator, and I believe it is in the best interest, as does my board, that it's in the best interest of the state of Minnesota to recognize that there are burdens provided by Northwest, and they can be difficult to deal with, particularly when they're in the stresses of bankruptcy. But at the end of the day, the state of Minnesota is better off by having an employer who is stable, coming out of bankruptcy, with a growing future serving this community. Our challenge at the Airports Commission is to get Sun Country to grow, to get AirTran to grow, to bring Lufthansa in as an international competitor, to grow the airport with good, solid, financially based competitors so that, in fact, you have a choice of where to go. But we must keep in mind that Northwest Airlines is critical to the economy of the region, and I happen to believe that one of the reasons why there are 19 Fortune 500 companies based in the Twin Cities, by the way, the largest concentration of Fortune 500 companies per capita than any other place in the nation except New York City, is because we have phenomenal connectivity through air transportation services provided by Northwest and other carriers. And let's not discount Sun Country. Right. Bankruptcy a few years ago, and now recovering and performing extraordinarily well, acquired by the Petters Group worldwide. Mm-hmm. Sun Country is doing extremely well with significant growth plans for the future to serve this community. So we think we have a pretty healthy base and a healthy foundation. But Northwest is critical to the future operation and economic vitality of the region.
Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do feel, though, after that last speech, I do have to say something about the employees, because all of us are on this table who represent all those employees who have gone through very hard times. And it has to be difficult for them to read the headlines about our largesse to the company that has treated them so badly and that will affect them for years to come. I mean, we've all heard the stories of how their lives have changed, and I just feel I have to at least put that on the table as one of the very painful chapters of what has just happened.
May I respond, Mr. Chair? My whole career has been in the public sector, in the military, or at the airport. I've been at the Airports Commission for 30 years, more than 30 years. We have 10 unions at the MAC. I think we have some of the finest labor relations accommodation at the airport of any place in the state of Minnesota. And I'm proud of our workers, and I'm proud of the cooperation I get from organized labor, and I'm proud of the non-organized employees that we have at the MAC. It pains me when I see thousands of not just workers, but workers' families and workers' neighbors. People watch what has happened at Northwest Airlines with the loss of employees, labor strife and strikes, and all of the hostility and the anger and the frustration, quite frankly, the financial panic that people experience. I live in Mendota Heights, the old part of Mendota Heights, up on the hill. I have a kind of a large backyard. In the corner of my fence, I guess I won't give you the names, but my few neighbors at the corner of that fence post are all Northwest Airlines mechanics. One person was a 43-year employee who chose to retire before the last strike because he simply didn't want to go through that again. The other two, 34 years and 28 years, laid off, lost their jobs, never worked at the airline again. They're close personal friends, they're people that I care about, and that's just two or three people out of thousands that lost their job. So I can assure you that with the commission and me personally, I've not forgotten and not really, quite frankly, agonized over the labor results. The flip side of that coin, quite frankly, is that Mr. Steenman, the CEO of Northwest Airlines, I'm afraid, had no choice. At least I truly believe he had no choice. He may not be the most personable, loving kind of a guy. He can't be in that capacity. He had to make some harsh decisions on determining the future financial viability of Northwest Airlines. And Doug Steenman made the decisions that had to be made to survive this company. Otherwise, Northwest Airlines, I believe, would not be here today. So it is a tough, tough business. It's highly volatile. It's been that way ever since 1978 with the passage of the Airline Deregulation Act. by Congress, and it's going to continue to be a roller coaster ride for the foreseeable future. And our hope is that through this package we negotiated, we'll provide some economic stability locally to all the airlines that serve Minneapolis-St. Paul. And my hope is that the airline, in fact, will grow and will reach our forecast projections of reaching 50 million, and we can start to draw some of those people back into a viable, healthy, strong industry. And we can re-employ folks who've got those skills and training to be mechanics and service workers on commercial airliners. But we've not lost sight of that at all, Representative.
I think that would be time for the meeting to adjourn. I appreciate, again, your comments, and thank you for coming. And the meeting is adjourned.